Introduction. The first part of this chapter covers the steps you can take as an emergency medical responder, EMR, to perform simple extrication procedures and to assist other rescuers with patient extrication. The extrication process consists of 7 steps, beginning with your arrival on the scene and ending with the removal of the patient from a position of entrapment. As an EMR, you are directly involved in the first 4 of the 7 extrication steps, but you should be aware of the entire process. You cannot provide effective assistance unless you fully understand what must be done and how each step is accomplished. By learning these steps, you can provide valuable care for the patient until other rescuers arrive. After the arrival of additional rescuers, your role may change to assisting them in administering further care. The second part of this chapter covers special rescue situations. These challenging situations can be life-threatening to both the rescuer and the patient. Special rescue situations include water rescue, diving injuries, ice rescue, confined space rescue, farm emergencies, and bus crashes. This chapter provides you with the guidelines for handling these situations. In each situation, your first objective is to maintain your personal safety. Do not perform any rescue procedures that could endanger either yourself or the patient. Extrication. This section describes simple techniques you can use to access, treat, and remove patients who are trapped inside crashed vehicles. As an EMR, it is essential for you to think quickly and to use the principles and guidelines that are presented here. You will also need several hours of practical exercises to become skilled in the process of extrication. Your EMR course should include a demonstration of the entire extrication operation. Become familiar with extrication equipment, its use, and the hazards involved in the extrication process. You should know what equipment is available in your community and how to summon this equipment. Rescue personnel usually use extrication techniques for motor vehicle crashes, but many of these same principles are applicable in other situations. Resourcefulness, common sense, and a knowledge gained through training are key attributes of the EMR and underlie every act of patient care. The safety of all rescuers and patients is an important consideration during the extrication process. Ideally, you should wear protective equipment similar to a firefighter's outfit. Full bunker gear consisting of a coat, pants, boots, helmet with face shield, and gloves. Minimally, you should wear a helmet with a face shield or goggles and gloves. A situation in which a patient is trapped in a motor vehicle can be complex enough to tax the skills and resources of even the most highly trained and well-equipped emergency medical services, EMS system. To ensure the best patient care, many different agencies may need to cooperate. Law enforcement, the fire department, EMS, and sometimes the utility company and a wrecker operator. It requires coordination and practice to achieve the cooperation and mutual understanding that is needed for a safe, smooth extrication effort. As you read this section, keep in mind these basic guidelines. Know the limitations of your training, equipment, and skills. Identify any hazards, power lines, gasoline, or other hazardous materials, hazmat. Control those hazards for which you are trained and equipped. Gain access to the patients. Provide patient care and stabilization. Move the patients only if absolutely necessary. As an EMR, you have 2 primary extrication goals. 1, to obtain safe access to the patients, and 2, to ensure patient stabilization. To achieve these goals, your role in the extrication process can be divided into the steps listed below. Think safety first, so that you do not become injured. An injured rescuer becomes a second patient. As the first trained rescuer on the scene, the actions you take can make the difference between an organized and a disorganized rescue effort, perhaps even the difference between life and death. You set the stage and you have an essential role in the extrication process. Step 1. Conduct a scene size-up. As soon as the dispatcher tells you of the incident, begin to plan for what you are likely to find on arrival. For instance, you may know that a certain type of crash frequently occurs at a particular intersection or along a specific stretch of highway. Do not, however, become complacent about responding to the same old thing. Use your knowledge, but be flexible. If the dispatch information is complete, you will know the types of vehicles involved. For example, two cars or a truck and motorcycle, and whether there are any injured or trapped people, burning vehicles, or hazmat present. As you approach the scene, and before you exit your vehicle, perform a scene size-up, which includes a visual overview of the entire incident and its surroundings. Remember, you must locate the patients before you can treat them. Rapidly determine the extent of the incident. Estimate the number of patients and try to locate any hazards that may be present. Then call for whatever additional resources you may need to manage the incident. Step 2. Stabilization of the scene and any hazard. It is especially important to keep a sharp lookout for hazards that can result in injury, disability, or death to a patient, yourself, other emergency personnel, or bystanders. Some of the most common hazards found at motor vehicle crash scenes include infectious diseases, traffic, bystanders, spilled fuel or other hazmat, automotive batteries, downed electrical wires, unstable vehicles, and vehicle fires. Infectious diseases. Many patients involved in motor vehicle crashes will have soft tissue injuries and active bleeding from open wounds or from their mouth or nose. Take standard precautions at all motor vehicle crash scenes. If sharp glass or metal is present, you should wear heavy-duty leather gloves over your latex or vinyl gloves. Otherwise, vinyl or latex gloves should offer sufficient protection. If there is the danger of splattering blood, consider using face protection. Traffic hazards. First, park your vehicle and other emergency vehicles so that they protect the scene and warn oncoming traffic to avoid the crash site. In most situations, park your vehicle in a location that does not obstruct open traffic lanes, but do not hesitate to use your vehicle to block traffic to protect yourself, your patients, and other rescuers. If other emergency personnel are already on the scene, ask them where you should park your vehicle. Consider the design of your vehicle's warning lights and park so you can use them to their best advantage. Do not leave your trunk lid open after removing your emergency equipment, as the lid may block your warning lights. Remember to wear an approved safety vest and other personal protective equipment. Another way to protect the scene is to ignite fusees or warning flares as soon as possible. Place the fusees up and down the road to warn oncoming traffic and give other drivers time to slow down safely. After you have taken these protective measures, survey the scene for other hazards. Always keep fusees away from flammable liquids. Bystanders. Keep bystanders away from the crash scene to minimize the danger to themselves and patients. It is not usually enough to ask everyone to stay away. Give specific directions, such as move back to the other side of the road or move back onto the sidewalk. Sometimes you can pick one or two bystanders and ask them to assist you in keeping others away from the scene. If available, either a rope or police or fire barrier tape is very effective for establishing an off-limits area. Bystanders respond appropriately to such barriers and usually will not cross them after they are set up. Spilled fuel. Gasoline or diesel fuel spills are common during motor vehicle crashes. Expect to find a fuel spill if a motor vehicle has been hit near the rear, is on its side, or is upside down. If a fuel spill is present, or if the vehicle is in a position that suggests a fuel spill could occur, call the fire department to minimize the fire hazard and to clean up any spilled fuel. If the patient is trapped in a motor vehicle that is leaking fuel and the fire department has not arrived, consider covering the fuel with dirt. This reduces the amount of vapor coming from the spill, which, in turn, reduces the danger of fire. Fuel vapors tend to stay close to the ground and will travel with the wind. Be sure to call the fire department whenever you suspect a fuel spill. In addition to fuel, other potentially hazardous fluids may leak from a wrecked vehicle, including motor oil, transmission fluid, power steering fluid, and antifreeze. Motor vehicle batteries. Motor vehicle batteries are hazardous, and you must avoid contact with them. In a front-end crash, the battery may already be broken open and acid may be leaking. Reduce the possibility of an electrical short circuit by turning off the vehicle's ignition. Do not attempt to disconnect the battery unless you have received special training in the proper way to do this and have the necessary tools. You could be injured by a short circuit, explosion, or contact with battery acid. Remember that hybrid vehicles and electric vehicles have large quantities of batteries. These batteries operate at much higher voltage than regular automotive batteries and present a greater risk of electric shock. Approach hybrid and electric vehicles cautiously unless you have received special training. Downed electrical wires. Downed electrical wires may be caused by high winds, ice buildup, a vehicle crashing into a utility pole, a fallen tree, or a building fire. Sometimes downed electrical wires explode in arcs of spectacular flashes and sparks. Other times they simply lie across the vehicle, fully charged with electricity and capable of causing injury or death. Locate the wires, but avoid contact. If a vehicle has a downed wire across it and passengers are trapped inside, immediately instruct them to stay inside the vehicle. Then summon the utility company and fire department. Move bystanders back in all directions to at least the distance between two power poles. Do not forget that electrical hazards can come from other sources as well, including traffic light control boxes and underground power feeds. Be sure to check everywhere, including under the vehicles, for electrical hazards. However, do not attempt to manage electrical hazards at vehicle crash scenes. Unstable vehicles. Assume that every vehicle involved in a crash is unstable, unless you have manually stabilized it. A vehicle that is positioned on a hill, on its side, upside down, or teetering over the edge of an embankment or bridge is obviously unstable. However, no matter how stable the vehicle appears to be, it may suddenly roll away or topple over. Be sure to check and ensure the stability of every vehicle before you attempt to enter it or treat the passengers inside. Vehicle on its wheels. If the vehicle is upright and on its wheels, you can ensure stability by chalking the front or back of each wheel with hubcaps or pieces of wood. If you can gain access to the inside of the vehicle, place the transmission in park and set the parking brake to prevent the vehicle from moving. You can also deflate the tires by safely cutting or pulling the valve stems. Vehicle on its side or upside down. A vehicle that is positioned on its side is extremely unstable. Fortunately, this position is unusual. Stabilizing a vehicle on its side is beyond the range of skills and equipment for many EMRs and should be handled by a specially trained rescue crew or the fire department. Many fire departments and rescue crews carry wooden cribbing, step chocks, or special jacks to manage this situation. If you must enter a vehicle that is on its side to respond to a life-threatening situation, do not climb on the vehicle. Carefully break the rear window glass and enter through the back of the vehicle. Bend over or crouch down to stay close to the ground. This will help prevent upsetting the vehicle's center of gravity. Your purpose is to keep the vehicle in the position found. Do not move it. Any movement could cause the vehicle to move. Gaining access to a patient is further discussed later in this chapter. An upside-down vehicle is relatively stable. The primary hazard in this situation is spilled fuel, which must be handled by the fire department. Vehicle fires. Even though fires happen infrequently at motor vehicle crash sites, they are a cause of great concern among EMS personnel. There are two types of fires related to motor vehicle crashes: impact fires and post-impact fires. Impact fires occur when the fuel tank ruptures during the crash. The vehicle is usually rapidly engulfed in flames, and it soon becomes impossible to approach it for a rescue attempt. Passengers rescued from this type of fire are usually saved by bystanders and witnesses to the crash, who act immediately to remove them. Post-impact fires are often caused by electrical short circuits and can be prevented by turning off the ignition, as discussed previously. These fires usually do not develop into major fires if prompt action is taken. Should a fire occur, first turn off the ignition. Then attempt to extinguish the fire with a portable fire extinguisher. Remove the passengers from the vehicle as soon as possible. Emergency actions for motor vehicle fires. If you arrive at a crash scene and find a motor vehicle on fire with people trapped inside, remember the following procedures. Use your dry chemical fire extinguisher. Most dry chemical fire extinguishers can be used on ordinary combustibles, flammable liquids, or electrical fires. Be sure you know how to use the extinguisher in your vehicle. Immediately have someone else gather fire extinguishers from other vehicles at the scene. Do not wait until your extinguisher runs out. Use your extinguisher to keep flames out of the passenger compartment. Direct the extinguisher to the base of the fire, not at the passenger compartment. Do not be overly worried about discharging the extinguisher onto the passengers. The dry chemical powder is non-toxic. However, the dry chemical can be corrosive, so you should watch for respiratory conditions. Remove the patients as quickly as possible, but take care because they may have sustained injuries. Move everyone at least 50 feet, 15 meters away from any vehicle that is on fire. Stay away from the front and rear ends of a burning vehicle. Modern bumpers contain air-filled cylinders that can explode forcefully when exposed to fire. Step 3. Gain access to the patients. The third step in the extrication process is to gain access to the patients. You cannot begin to examine and treat the patients until you have gained access to them. This section discusses the two methods you can use to achieve access. First, try to gain access through the doors. If this does not work, try to gain access through a window. Access through doors. Before you can provide patient care, you must gain access to the patient. Between 85% and 90% of all patients involved in a motor vehicle crash can be reached simply by stabilizing the vehicle and then opening a door or window. Try all the doors first, even if they appear to be badly damaged. It is an embarrassing waste of time and energy to open a jammed door with heavy rescue equipment when another door can be opened easily and without any equipment. Attempt to unlock and open the least damaged door first. Make sure that the locking mechanism is released. Then, try the outside and inside handles at the same time. Access through windows. If you believe that any passenger's condition is serious enough to require immediate care, for example, if the passengers are not sitting up and talking, and you cannot enter through a door, you should break a window. Do not try to break and enter through the windshield, because it is made of plastic laminated glass. The side and rear windows are made of tempered glass and will break easily into small pieces when hit with a sharp, pointed object, such as a tire iron, spring-loaded center punch, or fire axe. Because these windows do not pose a safety threat, they should be your primary access route. A spring-loaded center punch, available from many hardware stores, should be carried in your EMR life support kit. It can be used rapidly, takes up little room in the kit, and is nearly always successful in breaking the side and rear windows on the first try. If you must break a window to open a door or gain access, try to break one that is the farthest from the patient. However, if the patient's condition warrants your immediate entry, do not hesitate to break the closest side or rear window, even if the glass will fall onto a patient. If the patient can cover his or her own face when you are breaking glass, this may help to prevent injuries from glass shards. Tempered pieces of glass do not usually pose a danger to people trapped in vehicles. Advise EMS personnel if a passenger is covered with broken glass so they can notify the hospital emergency department. If there is glass on a passenger, pick off the glass, do not brush it off. After breaking the window, use your gloved hands to pull out the remaining glass from the window frame so it does not fall onto any passengers or injure any rescuers. If you are using something other than a spring-loaded center punch to break the window, always aim for a lower corner. That way, the window frame will help prevent the tool, such as a tire iron, fire axe, or large screwdriver, from sailing into the vehicle and hitting the person inside. After you have broken the glass and removed the remaining pieces of glass from the frame, try to unlock the door again. Release the locking mechanism, and then use both the inside and outside door handles at the same time. This will often enable you to force a jammed locking mechanism, even in a door that appears to be badly damaged. To access a vehicle through the window, follow these steps. 1. Wear heavy-duty leather gloves and eye protection if available. 2. Place the spring-loaded center punch at the lower corner of the window. 3. Press on the center punch to break the window. 4. With gloved hands, remove the broken glass to the outside of the vehicle. 5. Enter the vehicle through the window. Using the simple techniques described and illustrated in this section, you should be able to gain access to nearly all patients involved in a motor vehicle crash, even those who are trapped in an upside-down vehicle. When you gain access to a crashed vehicle, be alert for airbags that have not deployed. Airbags are mounted in the steering wheel on the driver's side and in the dashboard on the passenger's side. In some newer vehicles, supplemental airbags may also be mounted on the sides of the vehicle or around the rear seats. If the airbags did not deploy during the crash, they represent a hazard to rescuers because they may unexpectedly deploy and cause injuries. Avoid getting in front of an airbag that has not deployed until trained rescuers can assure you that it does not pose a hazard to you or to the patient. If you cannot gain access to the vehicle, you must do what you can to assist the patient. This means stabilizing the vehicle and protecting the scene until the proper equipment arrives. Step 4. Initial emergency care. After you gain access to the passengers, immediately begin emergency medical care. Conduct a patient assessment on every patient. After you determine the status of each patient, you should monitor the ABCs, airway, breathing, and circulation. Control bleeding, treat for shock, manually stabilize the cervical spine, and provide emotional support. Stay calm and do not forget to maintain the patient's body temperature by covering the patient with a blanket. If you have time, you can conduct a secondary assessment, physical exam, as discussed in Chapter 9, Patient Assessment. Leave the patients in the vehicle unless it is on fire or the patients are otherwise in immediate danger. Maintain manual stabilization until the patients are properly packaged, prepared, and can be removed from the vehicle by other trained rescuers. How to perform initial airway management when the patient is in a vehicle. 1. Place one hand under the patient's chin and your other hand on the back of the patient's head. 2. Raise the patient's head to a neutral position to open the airway. Step 5. Patient disentanglement. Extrication operates on the principle of removing the vehicle from around the patient. This process usually requires tools and specialized equipment, such as air chisels, manual or powered hydraulic rescue equipment, and airbags. In some serious extrication situations, disentanglement can take up to 30 minutes and requires advanced training. In some situations, you can make the patient more comfortable and give yourself more room to work by carefully moving the front seat back or by raising the adjustable steering wheel. modern rescue crews use the concept of the golden hour when managing serious trauma situations. The concept of the golden hour, sometimes called the golden period, means that the less time spent at the scene with a seriously injured patient, the better. The patient's chance for survival increases if rescuers can get the patient to definitive medical care as soon as possible. Step 6. Preparation for patient removal. As disentanglement proceeds, help prepare the patient for removal from the vehicle by applying dressings, bandages, and splints as needed, and maintaining manual stabilization of the head and cervical spine. If you are trained in the procedures and equipment for full spinal immobilization, you may be able to assist in this effort. For example, if you are properly trained and local protocols allow, you can help move and secure the patient onto a long backboard for removal. See Chapter 3, Lifting and Moving Patients. It is important to realize that the access route to the patient may not be adequate as an extrication route. The extrication route must be large enough to permit the safe removal of the packaged patient, whereas the access route may be relatively small. Step 7. Patient removal. After the patient is packaged, he or she is removed from the vehicle and placed onto the stretcher of the transporting ambulance. Remember, although you are directly involved in only the first 4 of the 7 extrication steps, your actions and assistance can have a vital impact on the entire operation. Review of the extrication process. Your familiarity with the phases of the extrication effort may enable you to assist the rescue and extrication crews. Take the time to find out about the rescue and extrication resources in your community. Ask the crews how you can assist them. They will probably be pleased to have your help and support. Remember these steps when you arrive on the scene of a motor vehicle crash with trapped passengers. Call for additional resources and extrication help. Specify the number and types of vehicles involved. Do not stand idly by while waiting for help. You should identify and contain safety hazards. Park your vehicle so that its headlights and warning lights can be used to protect and light the scene. Clear a working area around the site of the crash before you or rescue personnel attempt to stabilize the vehicle or vehicles. Use your head. Think and use what tools you already have. Remember to try opening the doors first rather than breaking windows. After you gain access to the patient, assess and monitor his or her condition. Above all, remain calm. Water and ice rescue. You may encounter situations in which a person needs to be rescued from the water. The person may be fatigued, may have sustained an underwater diving injury, may have gotten caught in a strong current, or may have fallen through the ice in the winter. A book of this scope cannot teach you the skills of a certified lifesaver. However, the following information does describe some simple techniques you can use to perform a water or ice rescue without endangering your own safety. Water rescue. When you see a person struggling in the water, your first impulse may be to jump in to assist. However, that action may not result in a successful rescue and can endanger your own life. If you are faced with a water rescue situation, remember to reach, throw, row, go. If you follow these steps, you may be able to perform a successful water rescue without entering the water. It may even be possible for someone who cannot swim to rescue a person who is drowning. Reach. Use any readily available object to reach the distressed person in the water. If the person is close to shore, a branch, pole, oar, or paddle may be long enough. If you are at a swimming pool, there may be a specially designed pole available for this purpose. Use it. Throw. If you cannot reach the person, throw something that can float or that the victim can grab. At a swimming pool, dock, or supervised beach, a flotation device, such as a ring buoy, may be available. If a flotation device is available, throw it to the person in distress. Some public safety departments carry a specially constructed rescue throw bag that contains a rope that can be thrown to a distressed person in the water. If your department carries a throw rope, you need instruction and practice in its use. If no buoy or throw bag is available, improvise. Throw a rope, plastic milk jug, or a sealed polystyrene plastic styrofoam cooler. Even a spare tire can support several people in the water. Row. If you cannot reach the person by throwing something that floats, you may be able to row out to the drowning person if a small boat or canoe is available. Consider this option only if you know how to operate or propel the craft properly. Protect yourself by wearing an approved personal flotation device. Go. As a last resort, you may have to go into the water to save the person. Enter the water only if you are a capable swimmer trained in life-saving techniques. Remove heavy clothing before entering the water. Take a flotation device with you if one is available. Initial treatment of a person in the water. If you are involved in a water rescue situation, your primary concerns for the patient are to open an airway, establish breathing and circulation, and stabilize the head and neck in case of spinal cord injuries. Turn a patient face up who is face down in the water. 1. Support the back and head with one hand and place your other hand on the front of the patient to keep the head and neck stabilized. 2. Keep the head in the neutral position and carefully turn the patient as a unit. 3. Stabilize the patient's head and neck. Use the jaw thrust maneuver to open the airway. Do not hyperextend the neck because of the high risk of associated spinal cord injuries. Look, listen, and feel for signs of breathing. If the patient is not breathing, start rescue breathing while the patient is still in the water. Ventilation will be much easier if you can stand on the bottom of the body of water. If the patient has experienced cardiac arrest, quickly stabilize the head and neck and remove the patient from the water. Place the patient on a hard surface before you begin cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR. See Chapter 8, Professional Rescuer CPR. Treat a patient who is unconscious in the water as if a spinal cord injury was present. Also, assume the presence of a spinal cord injury if a conscious patient in the water reports numbness or tingling in the arms or legs, is unable to move the extremities, or reports neck pain. Support the patient by floating a backboard in the water under the patient. Strap the patient to the backboard, stabilize the head and neck, and remove the patient from the water. If a rigid device is unavailable and the patient must be removed from the water before EMS personnel arrive, 6 people can lift and support the patient using their hands. Diving injuries. As an EMR, you may be called to care for people who are injured while diving. Most recreational divers use self-contained underwater breathing apparatus, scuba. Scuba gear consists of an air tank, a regulator, a mouthpiece, and a face mask. Commercial divers use either scuba gear or equipment that supplies air through a hose. Most underwater diving emergencies occur in coastal regions or in areas with large lakes. Diving injuries can cause trauma, near drowning, or specialized injuries. In situations involving trauma or drowning, remove the patient from the water and treat the patient using information and skills you have already learned. 2 specialized injuries are associated with diving: air embolism and decompression sickness, the bends. Usually, it will not be possible for you to differentiate between these 2 conditions. Both are caused by air bubbles being released in the body as a result of the changes in pressure while diving. If an air bubble affects the brain or spinal cord, the signs and symptoms may be similar to those of a stroke. These include dizziness, difficulty speaking, difficulty seeing, and a decreased level of consciousness. The patients may have difficulty in maintaining an open airway. If the air bubble causes a collapsed lung, the signs and symptoms will include chest pain, shortness of breath, and pink or bloody froth coming from the mouth or nose. If the air bubble obstructs blood flow to the abdomen, the patient will experience severe abdominal pain and may be bent over. If the air bubble involves a joint, there will be severe pain in that joint. To treat a patient with a suspected air embolism or decompression sickness, maintain the patient's airway, breathing, circulation, and normal body temperature. Oxygen should be administered as soon as it is available. Only administer oxygen if you have received the proper training and have the approval of your medical director. Some physicians recommend placing the patient on his or her left side, with the head of the patient slightly lowered. This may help to prevent further damage if there is an air bubble in the central nervous system. A patient with diving injuries may need to be transported to a hospital that is equipped with a hyperbaric recompression chamber. If you live in an area where diving injuries occur, you should receive specialized training and be familiar with the local protocols of your EMS system. Ice rescue. Ice rescue is extremely hazardous because ice is changeable and should always be considered unsafe. Think safety first. Do not exceed the limits of your training and do not put yourself at undue risk. You cannot save anyone if you fall through the ice yourself. As soon as you arrive at the scene of an ice rescue, visually mark the location where the person was last seen. This will enable other rescuers to concentrate their efforts on a limited area. Know who is responsible for ice rescue in your community and call this team as soon as possible. The basic rules of ice rescue are the same as water rescue. Reach, throw, row, go. Reach for the person using anything that will extend your natural stretch, such as a ladder, a pike pole, a tree branch, or a backboard. Next, throw a flotation device, throw rope, or anything that floats to pull in the person. Third, row or propel a small boat to the person if you can break through the ice, or use a toboggan to get across the ice. Using a toboggan will spread your weight over a wider area and reduce your chances of falling through the ice. Be sure that you have a rope and that the boat or toboggan is secured to the shore as well. Finally, if you must go, secure yourself to shore with a rope around your waist, lie on your stomach, and proceed across the ice. Spreading your weight over a wider area reduces your chances of falling through the ice. Maintain good communication with other rescuers. A motor vehicle on the ice presents a risky situation. Instruct the vehicle's occupants to avoid unnecessary movement. If the vehicle has not gone through the ice, instruct the occupants to open the vehicle's doors. This may help to slow the sinking of the vehicle if the ice breaks. If the doors cannot be opened, instruct the occupants to open the windows so they have a better escape route. If you must approach the vehicle, remember that the added weight of rescuers can cause movement of the vehicle. Do not place your head inside the vehicle because if it sinks, you may be unable to get out. During ice rescues, both the people on the ice or in the water and the rescuers are at risk for hypothermia. Keep all rescuers as warm as possible. Rescue personnel who are not directly involved in the rescue operation should remain in a warm vehicle until they are needed. Remove wet clothing from rescued people and dry off and warm them as soon as possible after they are removed from the water. Remember that people can survive for an extended period of time in cold water. If the patient has no pulse, start CPR and continue until the patient has been transported to a hospital. See Chapter 13, Environmental Emergencies, for more information on treating hypothermia. Confined space rescue. Confined spaces are structures designed to keep something in or out. Confined spaces may be below ground, ground level, or elevated structures. Below ground confined spaces include manholes, utility vaults, or storage tanks, old mines, cisterns, and wells. Ground level confined spaces include industrial tanks and farm storage silos. Elevated confined spaces include water towers and storage tanks. rescue situations involving confined spaces have two deadly hazards. The first hazard is respiratory. The confined space may have insufficient oxygen to support life, or it may be filled with a poisonous gas. Never enter a confined space without the proper respiratory protection, or else you risk becoming a patient yourself. The second hazard in a confined space is the danger of collapse. In a mine, for example, rescuers may need to shore up, support the confined space before they can safely enter. Confined space rescue requires a specially trained team. As soon as you determine there is a confined space situation, call for additional assistance and do not enter the space until help arrives. If a worker in a confined space begins to feel sick because of a lack of oxygen or the presence of a poisonous gas, co-workers may assume the worker is having a heart attack. Therefore, the call you receive may be for a sick person. When you arrive on the scene, take time to assess the scene carefully. If a patient is in a confined space, do not enter unless you are trained in confined space rescue and have adequate respiratory equipment to work in this deadly environment. Otherwise, wait for properly equipped and specially trained personnel to access, treat, and remove the patient. Farm rescue. Farms are located in most parts of the country. They range from a few acres of land with limited machinery and a small number of animals to large complexes that contain many acres of land, heavy-duty machinery, and large animals. Farm emergencies pose a wide variety of challenges for rescuers. Because many farmers work by themselves, the reporting of emergencies may be delayed. Once notification of an incident is received, there may be a lengthy response in getting to a farm. After rescuers arrive at a farm, it may be hard to pinpoint the exact location of the emergency. Poorly maintained roads, non-existent roads, and muddy soil may require you to leave your vehicle some distance from the patient. All of these factors can delay your response in getting to the patient. Farms contain a wide variety of hazards. Animals can seriously injure farmers and pose a serious risk to rescuers. Be alert for the dangers posed by animals. Also, farms contain a wide range of chemicals that can be hazardous. These include pesticides, herbicides, weed-killing chemicals, and fertilizers such as anhydrous ammonia. Any of these chemicals, if improperly handled, can create a dangerous situation for farmers and rescuers. Hazmat incidents are not always on highways. Additional information regarding pesticides can be found in Chapter 11, Poisoning and Substance Abuse. In addition, farms use a large number of electrically powered machines. Be alert for the shock hazard posed by the presence of electrical lines and electrical devices on any part of a farm. Some injuries involve tall barns or silos and often require rescuers who are trained in high-angle rescue techniques. Some farm silos are sealed and are designed to operate in an oxygen-deficient atmosphere. Always treat silos as a hazardous confined space. Under certain conditions, gases given off by the contents of a silo can explode. Some farms also contain below-grade manure storage pits. These pits may be filled with poisonous gases or be deficient in oxygen. Do not enter any confined space or enclosed below-grade structure without proper self-contained breathing apparatus and proper training. Farms also contain a wide variety of machinery. Machinery is used in every step of growing crops and raising animals. Accidents with farm machinery usually involve rollovers of farm tractors, entrapment in machinery, or severing of body tissue by sharp objects. Tractor rollovers are more common with older tractors, which do not have roll bars or reinforced cabs. Rollovers most commonly occur on steep slopes and often result in the operator being pinned beneath the tractor. Entrapments can occur with a number of crop harvesting equipment or mechanized animal feeding systems. power takeoff systems can catch clothing and can quickly entrap a person. As an EMR, your role in farm rescues consists of stabilizing the scene and providing initial medical care for the patient. Follow the 7 steps of extrication. Perform a careful scene size up to determine the scope of the incident. Shut off any electric power and turn off any machinery that is still running if possible. Call for adequate assistance from fire, rescue, and EMS organizations. In some communities, rescue personnel use farm implement mechanics for assistance with complex farm rescues. Helicopter transport of the patient may be beneficial. Remember, it is better to call for help and not need it than it is to delay adequate help from arriving at the scene. Stabilize any hazards that you can while keeping yourself and the patient safe. Realize that you do not have the training and equipment to stabilize all rescue scenes. If possible, gain access to the patient. Provide initial emergency care to the patient. Establish responsiveness. Support the patient's ABCs. Control bleeding and maintain the patient's body temperature. It is important to talk with the patient and provide emotional support. As other rescuers arrive on the scene, help them to disentangle the patient, prepare the patient for removal, and remove the patient. Your actions at a farm rescue incident can make a life-saving difference to the patient. Farm rescues can be challenging, but they require you to follow the same steps of patient care and extrication that you would use for other types of emergencies. Above all, remember your safety and the safety of the patient. Bus rescue. Buses operate in most communities. School buses transport students to school and to school-sponsored events. Cities operate fleets of municipal buses over established routes. Charter buses transport people of all ages to special events and on vacation trips. Specially equipped buses transport people with limited mobility. Interstate buses transport people all over the country. Because of the large numbers of people being transported by buses, significant potential exists for bus crashes to occur in any community. Bus crashes range from minor incidents with no injuries to mass casualty incidents. Therefore, you need to understand some guidelines for providing care to patients involved in bus crashes. A mass casualty incident refers to any accident or situation involving more patients than you can handle with the initial resources available. If you are an EMR at a bus crash, perform a scene size up or an overview of the scene, and call for adequate police, fire, and EMS resources. Establish an incident command system if there are multiple casualties. Set up a one-way traffic pattern for responding vehicles to avoid congestion and gridlock at the emergency scene. For example, you might direct all responding emergency vehicles to approach the scene from the east and depart the scene traveling toward the west. If multiple patients must be removed from a bus, pass equipment into the bus through one door or window and remove the patients through a second door or window. This will improve the efficiency of the extrication process. If confronted with a large number of patients, triage the patients using the START triage system. This system is used for sorting and treating patients in mass casualty situations. The START triage system is explained in Chapter 21, Incident Management. You are not expected to handle the command functions at a bus crash involving multiple casualties. However, you may be the only trained person on the scene for the first several minutes of an incident. Knowing some of the basic elements of handling this type of incident will help to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the care given to the patients.